Mets trading for center fielder Jose Siri from Tampa Bay in exchange for right-handed reliever Eric Orsi. Orsi had a 2.92 ERA and 61-plus innings in AAA last year, 84 strikeouts as well. He's 27 years old, or age 27 season is coming up. As for Jose Siri, more than known quantity, he's going to be in his age 29 season next year. He had a 76 OPS plus last year. League average is 100. His defensive metrics are off the charts. He's one of the best defenders in the league. He's better known, though, for his home run celebrations, Case, which, again, takes a lot of chutzpah for a guy hitting under 200. But he will celebrate it. Yeah. And that, it's good or bad, that's kind of what he's known for, is this sort of thing. So the Mets either like it or look past it and look at the defensive work and will stick him in center field and watch him, you know, rain down fly ball.
Well, that's the thing. A plus 12 DRS out there in center
field. Look at this guy, Case.
Yeah, hitting 200 or below with some unbelievable celebrations. You know, go out. You could never do that back in the day. But anyway, 25 home runs in 2023, 18 last year. I think the biggest thing is, you know, when you look at this, even right here, fielding run value leaders. I mean, this guy can flat out go get it in center. So when you look at this, Harrison Bader, that probably looks like he's going to be gone. Taylor and Siri in center field. You've got electric center fielders. And I think the one thing about Siri that's a little bit different than Bader, he has a little bit of pop. He can hit the ball at the ballpark.
Well, but Bader out-hit him this year. And Siri didn't out-hit anybody. I mean, he had a 255 on base. 255 Case. So, now maybe that can improve.
That
but to your point, right, you could see in the playoffs with Bader and Taylor out there, David Stearns evidently heavily values defense in center field, and there might be an awful lot to that.
Well, I think the biggest thing is you win up the middle, BK. You win up the middle, especially in center field. You know, you talk about even a guy like Doyle this year, how he played, but Dalton Varsho was so good. Kiermaier, these are the guys that are game-changing players in center field. Jose Siri is in with those guys. So when you look at these guys, a lot of the guys on here, we just say, hey, they're great defenders. We almost don't care what they do offensively as long as you save runs up the middle.
I think there's something to that where we've accepted that with catching.
Yes.
Saying, look, the guy's not hitting. It doesn't matter. He does so much more. You can see in the playoffs, like when the center fielder has a problem, it's not just one base. It's two bases. Yep. It's three bases. It matters a lot. Again, the Mets get Jose Siri from Tampa Bay.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, November the 24th, 2024. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, Talking Mets No G, and don't forget the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks on the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast as we charge into the Thanksgiving holiday weekend. Hope maybe some of you have already started taking some time off. Great 4-day weekend, one of the best weekends of the year to get like that long holiday weekend, and it's your last chance as a baseball fan to recharge, because I think it's going to be a little bit quiet this week when it comes to major free agent conversation. But after that Thanksgiving holiday, after everybody gets the turkey put away and the stuffing put away and wakes up from their food coma on Monday morning, you're just a week away from the winter meetings, and things are about to get real, and the first domino to fall is going to be Juan Soto. Not a lot of Juan Soto talk. I'll address that in a little bit. We'll just kind of go into some of the latest shenanigans going on there. Jose Siri is a Met. I'll give my thoughts. And what are we going to see this winter if Soto doesn't sign? That's kind of like the interesting part. It isn't so much Soto or bust, but plan B is a little bit head-scratching, because I was thinking about that this morning, and I just don't really know where to go. It's going to be interesting because you don't have a feel of what David Stearns would do if they miss out on Soto. And joining me after the break, good friend of the program, our resident prospect guru, Ernie Dove, at Ernest Dove on X. Ernie covers the St. Lucie Mets and is one of those guys I go to that knows anything and everything about the Mets organization, and he dives behind the scenes into underneath the stats, into underneath the general news, and gives us a perspective of what's going on there, and I expect no less when Ernie joins us. Perfect week. Rule 5 draft is coming up at the winter meetings. The Mets left some former top prospects, and they are still top prospects potentially, but unprotected for the Rule 5 draft. They tendered a contract only to Sean Reed Foley. They've been going out there and signing quite a bit of the scrap heap as we head into the early offseason. So what does Ernie think of some of these moves? What is it? Is that an indictment on the Mets farm system? Who's a keeper? Who's not? Who does he like? Is there anybody who's a sleeper in this farm system that he likes? And I can't wait to hear what Ernie has to say, because there's nobody I trust more with giving me the lowdown on what is the New York Mets farm system than Ernest Dove. And, of course, we here at the Talking Mets podcast, what our buddy David Mills, contributor, have done our own prospect hugging, so to speak, and put out lists and whatnot. But Ernie really gets, you know, underneath and another layer down, so I can't wait for him to join us in the back half of the show. But to start out, I just want to have a couple of minutes here to have just a quick, honest conversation. And I very rarely make this show about me personally. It's always about the Mets and me hosting a Mets show. But a couple of weeks ago, I had announced, and I've been thinking about how to come to you with this. I had announced that I was going to be going on to the QBC, the Queens Baseball Convention, Saturday, December 7th, as a member of the independent media panel. Our friend Anthony Rivera was going to be on there, a few others, and our good buddy Mark Healy from Gotham Baseball was hosted. And Mark, he had announced it on the Twitter spaces right after Game 5 of the postseason in the NLCS against the Dodgers, and he announced that he'd love to have me on, and obviously I couldn't wait to see Anthony and what have you. And about a week ago tonight, I'd gotten a call from Mark, and this has nothing to do with Mark. It has nothing to do with Mark or any of the people on the panel. But, you know, it informed me that those that run the QBC felt that this show, what I bring, this brand of conversation wasn't exactly what they needed on that panel right now. They wanted to go into a different direction. And I guess they felt that they needed a different voice, and what I brought wasn't exactly what they were looking for. So I will not be at the QBC. And this isn't sour grapes. I just wanted to let you guys know, because maybe you were, after I announced it, showing up, and I know there's been some promotion on X and saying, hey, you know, I want to say hi to Mike, and then I'm not there, and, you know, you're like, hey, what happened? Nothing wrong with me. No conflict. It's quite simply, and let me put it to you this way. Mark Healy was nothing but a stand-up guy about it. It's a business decision by the QBC. They're looking for the most diverse panel they can have. When I mean diverse, I mean diverse on opinion. And they just did not feel that this show, what I bring, was what they were looking for this year. So I won't be there. Our good friend Anthony Rivera will have to pick up the slack. And I will not be going there as a consumer. I know where I want to be. And when I'm not wanted somewhere, I don't push myself on anybody. So I'm disappointed. You know, I think it's a bad decision. And again, it's not Mark's decision. This is going to more of the promoters of the event, who have to have their say on, and it's their event, it's their prerogative, on the kind of mix they want to have on the different panels. And I think it's a bad decision. I think any event that's Mets related that doesn't have the opinions and the feel of what this show, which we've kind of pushed ourselves into the, I believe, at the pantheon of Mets independent media out there. My opinions, a lot of ways, are your opinions, because, you know, you are sharing in some of the thoughts, and I get, and a lot of what I get is through interaction with you on X. And maybe next year. I have no ill will towards the QBC. I think it's a great event. I think you guys should go. I am going to be disappointed that I can't interact with some of you. I was looking forward to seeing some of you. And that's really it. So I hope you have a great time. I'm disappointed that I won't be part of a really cool panel. Mark's going to do a great job. Rivera's going to do a great job. I know there's a couple others on there that I haven't really met yet that I'm sure are going to do a great job. I don't know who's going to take my place. couldn't tell you that. I'm sure they'll have a press release the next week or so, maybe right after, right before Thanksgiving. But I just wanted to let you know, and I'm not going to go on and on and on about it, just in case you're wondering, well, Mike, what happened? I won't be at the QBC, and it's nothing to do with me. I'm fine. I'm right. My schedule's open that day. It's more of what they're looking for to round that panel up. I'm not that. And that, you know, I respect that. You know, people have to make decisions about the mix they want when they put on an event or a show. And perhaps they felt there was some redundancy with me. Maybe I have some thoughts about why I'm not a fit. I'll keep those to myself because they're not productive to the conversation, nor is it the kind of negative energy I want to put out there. Because, again, it's a great event. I think you guys should go. And looking forward to interacting with you guys and hearing how it went after. I think Greg Jeffries is going to be there and some other former Mets and Baseball Night in New York. And I think Terry Collins always makes an appearance. And, you know, he yelled at him about how he blew the World Series and the bullpen management in game 4 and 5. But that would have been what I would have done. Hey, Terry, can I sit down and talk to you about game 4, 2015 against the Royals, you know? That would have been my thing. I've been dying to talk to him about that. But anyway, enough about me. Let's get to the meat and potatoes of the show. So you know that you are at a point of fatigue when it comes to Juan Soto. When the big news since the last time we came on the air, and here's the scary part. Everybody, the Rosenthals, Olney's, Heyman, everybody seems to be putting the Mets in the favorite chair. And last year, if you remember, with the Yamamoto sweepstakes, it was always the Dodgers and the Yankees. So the same kind of individuals that are putting out there the favorite have had a pulse on these kind of things in the past. And we've talked about it. Heyman is really tight with the Boris camp. Rosenthal is probably pretty tight in the circles of baseball. It's easy always to put the Mets as the favorite in a sweepstakes that could very well come down to money. Mets have a lot of money that came off the books, about $150 million towards next year's payroll. Steve Cohen is worth $21 billion or whatever he's worth. He's the richest owner in the sport. He showed a propensity for swashbuckling type of spending. So put two and two together. That's lazy analysis. So that's, I guess, a different feel. Like Mets fans, I think it's almost like, don't say it. I've heard Mets fans say to me, don't say it, don't jinx it, because they're not used to being in that power position. And the more that you hear reports about his meeting with the Yankees, the more you have to feel, well, you know, he's not unhappy with the Yankees. And I'm not saying he won't go back to the Yankees, but it's not the power of the pinstripes that you're used to hearing from free agents from all these years ago, whether it be Giambi or Mussina or Teixeira or A.J. Burnett or CeCe Sabathia. When, you know, Cole, like anytime the Yankees have focused in on getting somebody, over the course of the last 30 years, they've gotten them. I mean, they missed out on Bonds and Maddox, and that was like a big deal back in 1993. But after they won the World Series in 96, and then George took that and leveraged that towards their brand, very rarely did they miss out. I mean, they missed out here and there. I mean, it's not 100%. You know, the first time that Clemens was a free agent and went to Toronto, the Yankees missed out, but you know, he was coming off a down year, and for some reason, Toronto was more his speed. Maybe he wanted to get away from the big market. But in the end, they got who they wanted. They got Clemens. They got Mussina. They got Giambi. They wound up trading for A-Rod. Anytime the Yankees wanted somebody, they've been able to get it one way or the other. Now, that may not be the case. And if it comes down to money, I think the Mets have the advantage. Does Soto believe in Cohen? And one of the reports has been that the relationship with the owner is important. I think Cohen is a very hands-on owner, an owner that these guys could connect with. So, I mean, we'll see. I mean, I think you're at the stupidity point when reports about who Soto following on Instagram and who Cohen's wife Alex is following on Instagram are like news. That tells you you're starving for hot stove news. And it's not going to get any better because this is a week, like I said, in the past, you know, the offseason in baseball, it was 24/7, 365. This crop of agents and owners and general managers actually want to take a little bit of time off during the holidays. And next week would be a situation where Boris would start taking offers. And I had said I thought that maybe we would start to see a thinning of the herd at this point where somebody would come out and say, hey, I'm out. We haven't heard that. But it's interesting, you haven't heard too much about the Phillies or the Phillies meeting, which makes you wonder. And I think definitely the week after Thanksgiving, and I think very close, maybe not the night of the kickoff of the winter meetings, but leading into that, I would expect an announcement and some information coming out. So the week after Thanksgiving is going to be wild. So just stay tuned and buckle up. So a lot of fun stuff is coming about. Now, the Mets did make a move this week. They traded Eric Orsi for Jose Siri. And I went, huh? Siri? And, I mean, again, everybody's talking about it. It was Howie Rose made the joke. Every time I say Siri, and I don't have my iPhone next to me, the iPhone's going to go crazy. And I think you heard last week, for some reason, if you heard in the background during the show, I was talking and my iPhone went off. I don't know why. So they're listening. They're listening. I have no idea why. But when I first heard Jose Siri, I went, ugh. But then, and look, I loved Harrison Bader. And if you look at, if you go to Beyond the Mic and you look at what I wrote about the Mets, the one of the things you I felt like they needed, and that's why I thought Michael Taylor might still be an option as a free agent. They looked at him last year, was defense up the middle. The Mets, if they're going to go out and sign a Soto and build offense in other parts, like with Vientos at third, potentially Alonso at first, Soto maybe in right, you have Nimmo in left, Lindor of short, but he's a two-way player. Alvarez behind the plate. You have offense in all these other areas. Defense up the middle is a big thing. I believe in it. Stearns believes in it. Bader provided it. And really, at this point, when I thought of Siri and I looked at the strikeouts, which are insane, I mean, the amount of strikeouts and what have you, well, you know, he's basically Harrison Bader. I saw the outs above average. I've seen all the advanced analytics. I don't really have a lot of experience watching him. I did see him play in Tampa when I went to watch the Mets in Tampa. I think he had a home run in that series. That was the sweep that the Rays swept the Mets that series at home. So you know what I did? I said, you know, I'm not going to go to Fangraphs and Baseball Savant and listen to Scouting Report A, B, and C. I'm going to go to my old reliable. I'm a big Stratomatic baseball fan. So I just went to the Stratomatic baseball, Jose Siri, defense rankings, you know, and if you're a Stratomatic baseball fan, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 if you're really bad. Like Kyle Schwarber in the outfield is a 5. And I saw that that Siri was a 1. He had a plus arm in the sense where he actually takes away from the runner rating. He's, you know, when you're a negative 2, which I think he was, that's a good thing in Stratomatic. If you're a plus, that means you have a weaker arm. So if Stratomatic says he's got a better arm than Bader and he's got the same amount of range, hey, he's going to pop a home run just like Bader. He's going to strike it a lot more. He's going to drive you crazy with his antics. You know, you saw Beyond the Mic, our friend David Mills contributor wrote a little bit about him this past week. Again, if you're not a subscriber, I strongly suggest you go to the Substack and subscribe. Less than a cup of coffee a month. Shameless plug here. And, you know, he's going to have a lot of mustard for that hot dog, Siri. Maybe Mendoza could calm it down. I think he is who he is. He's 28 years old. He's under control for 2 or 3 years. And if he could give you elite defense up the middle and pop a home run every once in a while, you put him in the 8 or 9 hole at that point. That's where he's going to be. He's got some speed. I don't know how he is with the base running. I thought Bader was a pretty good base runner. I mean, the downside is, and this is a cost control move for a team that needs to save somewhere, because you're going to potentially be signing an outfielder that's making $50 million a year and potentially a first baseman making $27 to $28 million a year. You got to save somewhere. And a Harrison Bader is not going to take a discount from the $10 million a year. He's probably looking for a multi-year deal. And the thing about when you have these carbon copies, when you have a Siri versus a Bader, and you say, look, you go to the Stratomatic card, or you go to the Baseball Savant, or you go to Fangraphs, or Baseball Reference, whatever you go to, and you say, well, they're comparable. You're not wrong, but the character's not comparable. Bader was a gamer. Bader was a guy that fit in that clubhouse. He was a New York guy. He grew up here in the Bronx. I think some of those things count. Unfortunately, they cost, and they cost a lot. And at some point, you have to make decisions. And right now, overpaying for a defensive-minded center fielder, when the cost of somebody, 20% of that cost in Siri, is a reliever that may or may not turn out. Now, between Paul Gervaisi and Eric Orsi, I could see them being the setup man and closer for the Rays, and Mets fans going crazy because anybody goes to the Rays, they all of a sudden become a dominant reliever. Doesn't matter who you are. We've talked about this. We're trying to figure out what that secret sauce is. So, Jose Siri's on board. Again, I have no problem with defense up the middle. I like it. I like elite defense in center field. Tyron Taylor's not too shabby either. Obviously, he's got a sports hernia. He'll be, you know, coming back, and we'll see what happens in spring training. But Siri's going to be part of this team. And then let's see what happens with an Acuna who, you know, I've heard can play center field, and Drew Gilbert, and maybe Jet Williams and things like that. These are some questions for our friend Ernie Dove in the back half and what have you. Now, as far as another thought, and I don't want to take up too much time before we get to Ernie, because that's we really want to dive in to this 40-man roster. One of the things I've been thinking about, because it's been all Soto all the time since the season ended, if the Mets fail on Soto, and I don't think they will, but it could happen. I mean, maybe he likes Boston better. Maybe he goes back to the Yankees, or the Yankees, under immense pressure, just say, look, I can't let the Mets get him. And then if the money's the same, does he take the bird in hand and the team he knows, or potentially two in the bush of the team he doesn't know? I don't know. We really don't know what's going through his head there. But if they lose out on Soto, then what does the offseason look like? Because right now, Soto and, you know, maybe bringing back the band on the pitching, staying away from the top of the market, bringing back a Severino, Manaea, maybe trading for a Sonny Gray or Jordan Montgomery. I really don't think they're going to go in on the Garrett Crochet market. Continuing to build out the bullpen from a value equation. I mean, that is kind of how I see the offseason going. And I think Soto is the big piece because he's going to immediately make the offense better. You can't just sign Soto without bringing back either Alonso or going after another bat like a Christian Walker, you know, maybe an Alex Bregman, guys like that. You had to bring in Soto plus a very good bat. The Mets are not going, you know, Soto is going to be a big part of this offense, and that is an upgrade in and of himself, but you can't just stop there. You have to keep going. They need the bat, the big bat in Soto, and another bat. So if you don't get the big bat in Soto, then is it a Pete Alonso, Alex Bregman? Do they go for Anthony Santander? Maybe move, put him at the DH, or, you know, figure something out, make Vientos the DH and go with Bregman. I mean, I heard he wants 11 years. After Correa and what Correa got from the Giants, nothing would surprise me with spreading out payments. I mean, I could see an 11-year deal being more about spreading out a big contract than the payments. I mean, paying Bregman into his 40s, that's not something I'm really big on. Or do they just go component-driven up and down another offseason of that and see if they could build on the good vibes of this team and bring good character, good pieces back and then see who becomes available? Or are they going to go all in on a star? I mean, you hear things like Nolan Arenado. I don't want nothing to do with Nolan Arenado. I think if you look at his numbers, he's significantly declining over the last couple of years. Vintage Nolan Arenado at third base with that bat, moving Vientos either to first or DH, that's a whole different ballgame. That's not the Arenado you're getting at this point. So, you know, unless you're somehow taking his contract on and they're paying for, you're taking a piece of it on and they're paying for it, and maybe you get a Sonny Gray or something back, that's a possibility. But it will be interesting, and this will be a conversation we'll have. It will be a little bit of a downer, and I know with this front office, they are prepared for plan B. They are not. This is not the Wilpons. This is not an all or nothing. Let's, you know, throw a big 3-point shot. We hit it great. We miss it. Oh, shucks. They have a plan B. They have a plan C. Now, how sexy those plans are and how they're going to ignite the fan base after this very fun season, that's another story. And, it's a little bit interesting how that's going to play out, because after Soto, there's a lot of questions, whether it be Teoscar Hernandez or Bregman or Santander or even Alonso coming back. You don't, and this is why Soto and making the play for Soto is so important, because you just don't have a player of this ilk coming out anytime soon. They just don't become available, especially at 26 years old. They just don't become available. So it'll be interesting at this point. The Mets have done a lot of value shopping so far. So they really, you know, they are going to be a club that's going to be in on a lot of the big guys. And then I think, especially when it comes to the bullpen, I could see it already. He's going to go to the well with this, finding the little treasures there. And we'll probably have to do a trash or treasure on the Beyond the Mic. We haven't done one of those yet. There's a lot of those that we could play out on that. So Anyway, that's kind of the setup. We're heading into Thanksgiving. Not a lot of news. I don't think you'll get a lot of Soto news this week. I don't want to talk about his Instagram. I don't want to see who he's following. I don't want to see who his family's liking on Facebook or Instagram. That tells you we're all bored and we need some news. And, you know, go have Thanksgiving dinner. Go watch some football. Go watch some old, you know, instant classic Mets games. Don't get involved in all this social media nonsense because it means nothing. And we'll deal with Soto and the post-Soto fallout because I don't want to talk about it now because I really don't think it's something we're going to have to talk about. I really believe the Mets are going to sign Soto. I really do. I just think that this has been, and I go back to that story from Black Edge, the book about Cohen, when he wanted the mansion in Connecticut, he basically told the guy who was competing with him, hey, I'll write you a check, go away, or, you know, if you don't want to do that, I'll just keep one-upping you. Dollar after dollar. And I think he's going to do that with Soto. Now, there's always a threshold. And I made a joke, 14 years, $800 million on X. And I'm like, well, that's kind of crazy. That's like when Dr. Evil in Austin Powers says, you know, on $1 trillion, $1 billion, $1 million. Like, you know, some point it gets silly. But you never know, right? You never know when it comes to a player of this talent, Scott Boras, and so on and so forth. So anyway, let's take a quick break. When we return, Ernie Dove is going to be joining us. We're not going to be talking Soto or Bregman or Teoscar Hernandez or Pete Alonso free agency. We're going to be diving into the 40-man roster, the around the edges, the Rule 5 draft, the prospects, guys that right now we may not be hearing about or talking about, but maybe as soon as 2025, a big part of the Mets. Who's the next Mark Vientos? Who's the next player that could come in and contribute like a Tylor Megill or a David Peterson? Let's hear from Ernie Dove, our resident prospect guru. That and more right after this.
Narvaez at first. Nothing in two on Lockridge. Here's the pitch. Swing and a miss, strike three. He got him with this sweeper. And it's another quality start for Dom Hamill. Six innings of one-run baseball, and he has struck out five in six innings of work.
Vassell's 3-2. Swing and a tip into the catcher's glove for strike three. Vassell starts game two of the doubleheader with a strikeout against a guy who almost never strikes out.
We're back. Good friend of the show. Who better to talk days after the Mets finalized their 40-man roster for now, made some Rule 5 decisions. And it's our good friend, covers the St. Lucie Mets, Ernest Dove. You can check out Ernest on X at Ernest Dove, YouTube, sportswireradio.org. And Ernie, thanks for coming on, man. I think the last time you and I spoke was after the teardown of 2023. A lot has happened. And like I said, though it's been all about Soto, there's been a lot of little stuff going around the Mets on the roster with scrap heap pickups and Rule 5 decisions and tendering contracts. And ultimately, Soto can't play nine positions. He can't pitch nine innings. He can't close. So you're going to need some guys around their margins. And David Stearns has proven to be good with that, but some interesting moves. So welcome to the program. And how are you?
I'm good. Happy to be back on the show. And obviously off season, but there's nothing off about the Mets when you got to talk about them. So, hey, why not keep talking all through winter?
Absolutely. So were you surprised? You know, here's Dom Hamill, former top 10 prospect just a year ago. Mike Vassell, I'm not saying he was widely thought of as a top prospect, but he was hovering around the top 10 for the Mets. Pitching depth is so important. The Mets needed 12 starters this year, one of them Julio Teheran, and they were relatively healthy. So the decision to let these guys be exposed to the Rule 5 draft could be they're not in any belief that they're ready and could stick around, but it could be something more as David Stearns now is a year into learning what he has here in this farm system.
I mean, yeah, you know what? Honestly, that's the key. And I've been trying to snoop around with some sources behind the scenes the entire year. And one of the many things I was noticing with Stearns is how aggressively he was pushing all the prospects. Like in all these recent years, the minor league all-star break and everything else, and guys somewhat get moved. Usually guys or kids never get moved from the Dominican League all the way to stateside in the same season. And here we are moving multiple guys, He's moving multiple 18, 19-year-olds all the way up to low A. I would probably guesstimate, talking with some peoples, that I think he's trying to push the envelope because none of this farm system is his. He wanted to see what he has, and you might be seeing it right in and there with Vassell and Hamill because they have some electric stuff. Then the numbers went down. Vassell's K rate dropped significantly in Triple A. So it looks like he's going to do his kind of revamp and start over. And you can tell from the draft, he's trying to draft certain bats with certain exit velo now that they have the resources. Because by the way, 2-3 years ago, they really didn't have these resources on the amateur level. So even certain guys that they ended up drafting, probably not the greatest idea because they didn't have all of those resources going in. So I think that's what's going on right now.
Absolutely. And look, you've had, what, 5 guys running player development up until this year. There's been, even with Cohen's money, there's been so much chaos, so much turnover. The fact that they've been able to make the playoffs a couple of times and compete shows you the largesse of the payroll. There was one name that, again, I'm not a scout. I'm looking at it from a statistical standpoint. But I was a little surprised because I think he's a guy that could get picked and maybe one of those that sticks around with a second division club. Yoandre Suarez, were you a little surprised on that? And are you hoping that he sticks around? And is he somebody that could provide some pitching depth? Because numbers in Binghamton were good. And he also pitched a no-hitter. Not that that matters, but it's not like, he actually looked a little bit, from a statistical standpoint, more polished than Vassell and Hamill.
Yeah, I had my like sleeper guys all over the place, like I always do. And there was Yoandre Suarez, who obviously one of everyone in Major League Baseball who had Tommy John a few years ago. And he was pretty much, I would have seen him as bare minimum top 20 prospect, if not higher, before Tommy John. And then there was a Jordani Ventura, who was more of the Familia-esque type electric arm without the command. So they kind of fully looks like they lost on Ventura, but
yeah, he's with the Suarez, Yankees now, Ventura, I believe.
Yeah. And then Suarez, what he kind of signed back on a minor league deal, but there's still a Rule 5 implication. But would he get picked up? I mean, obviously, as a biased prospect hugger, I would think someone would want to give that a chance because he does have the upper minors experience. You could probably stick him in the bullpen. I'm going to give the same team because the A's, who already took Carlos Cortez, the infielder turned outfielder in the Mets organization, they already scooped him up fast because he could, even a guy like Suarez can probably almost break camp definitely anyway with the A's. I feel like everyone can.
Sure.
But I do like his arm still, but it's one of those things like, would you protect him? I would, at this point, my heart would want to rank him above Hamill and Vassell anyway, but at the same time, I think Stearns is in a certain thing going on right here now. And now is when the 40-man crunch actually becomes legitimate in the Mets organization. Totally different organizations. But like with the Rays, they have to do things differently. So they're always having a 40-man crunch because their entire roster is like ARB-eligible, pre-ARB guys. But now when you get into the more Dodgers-esque form of a farm system and an organization, it looks like they're going to have to keep risking guys like that, which is why you have to actually let go of an Alex Ramirez, a former top 5-ish to 10 prospect, because if you're not working out fast enough and you're not a Stearns guy, I think he's willing to move on. And I think Suarez, like at the trade deadline, I was worried about some of the arms, like when they gave up Paul Gervais, they gave up Tyler Stewart. Even talking with the organization, you got to give to get, number one. Number two, they did really like Tyler Stewart. But at the same time, you have to give to get. So
right.
Even when they like certain guys that they weren't technically theirs, Stearns is ready to move.
It's interesting because a couple of years back, not too long ago, when the Mets had guys like Jeurys Familia and they were free agents, you kept hearing, well, you can't get anything. They're a free agent. It's funny how the group think in baseball is. Now Jesse Winker's a free agent. And well, now you got to give a prospects like something changed in the last, maybe since COVID, 5 years. Cause I always used to call BS on that. I'm like, okay, I've got a closer. The A's are in a position where they need to win. And why wouldn't you give a prospect? Now, part of that was the prior ownership's unwillingness to eat salary. I understand that. But I also think that you could hear from the media perspective, when you make deals, even if it's a lower level deal, like a Winker, like a Phil Maton, Jose Siri, you're going to have to give up something. Guarantee you one of these arms, I don't know how the Rays do it. They're going to turn these bullpen arms into something good, even if it's for a year or two. So it's interesting how it's all changed. The group think around the league has changed.
Well, yeah, I feel like Paul Gervais put on a Rays minor league uniform and no longer threw balls.
Three strikes. I was like, what happened? And look, Maton was needed, and I know he was bad in the playoffs, but the Mets don't get there without Maton. And that's another story. I'm not totally about this value-driven bullpen that Stearns is going to go by, but that's a different story. It's amazing what they do. I don't know what they do. The Mets have all this money, but you know what? Figure out what the Rays are doing with bullpen arms, because that's what they need.
Well, I mean, I'm not totally against the Siri move. I can understand some of it, but it kind of sounds like, I think we just signed Jake Mangum, but with power. But we lost Jake Mangum years ago, and now he's on the Rays 40 man. So for all I know, Jake Mangum is now replacing Siri. That's only my opinion, because I don't know how the whole spring and camp's going to go. But if you promote a guy like that, who's in his late 20s with multiple years AAA experience on the Rays team, they could replace guys by having equal-ish guys. Like I said, Siri is basically Mangum, but without the power. So good move, as always. But those are the kind of moves, like you said, these are the kind of things that are going to have to happen all the time. And the Mets, as they build their farm even more, they're going to have to keep unloading their farm even more. Now, are they going to turn into the Padres and package them off 3 and 4 at a time every year at the deadline? Hopefully not, but it's going to start.
I don't think they're in a position they can do that right now. I don't think they have enough.
I really don't think so as well, because as much as I overhype the Mets system like I'm known for doing, here we are now heading into winter. Even if they stay with the organization, Vassell, Hamill, Tidwell, it sounds absolutely amazing to have three top 30 ranked prospects all sitting there basically eligible for the major league rotation right now. But can you see any of them breaking camp in the rotation based on last year?
No, and a team with a championship aspirations, I think, has to look at them more as depth than as, oh, he's your number five starter. I mean, Tidwell is the one, I guess, that's closest to being a viable contributor in a way that you feel like, okay, he can help you win. But other than that, I mean, that's really would be interesting. And you saw, and I know there's a couple other names there, but you look at what they've done quietly since the offseason. You got Kevin Hergett, Hangenman from Boston, Justin Hangenman, who may be a starter they're looking at. They signed Chris Davinsky, a bullpen arm there. They got this Cuban guy, Gonzalez. I mean, there's, you know, Rico Garcia, Alex Carrillo. There's a lot of arms they brought, and those are just the arms. And I know that the offseason's kind of like fantasy baseball now, where Stearns acquired a couple of guys last offseason, and then they never made it to February. They moved them off the roster. But it's interesting. Does that, all these scrappy pickups, does it tell you he doesn't like what he's got down there? That's what I'm wondering.
I mean, that's the honest factor truth of what I have to see with some of these moves. Again, some of these moves have worked. It's like, hey, Stearns is known for the bullpen. Now we know the Mets bullpen on and off would start to implode and everyone hates everything, including Stearns. But some of the guys were having some hot streaks. Maton pre-playoffs was pretty much one of the best bullpen arms at the end of the regular season. You know, pen arms are always fickle. But I think that's, and again, now at the end of the day, it sounds very harsh for someone like me who's always positive, but a lot of the signings that they're doing, whether it's guaranteed money or not, there's no guarantee any one of these guys is going to actually break camp on the 40-man roster.
They might not even make it to February with the way things go in the league now. Everybody's claiming people. It's like your roster is fluid throughout the offseason. It's not just fluid. And that's where the modern GM, who grew up on fantasy baseball, in my opinion, how they play. And there's nothing wrong with it. It's just a different way of doing business than 15 or even 10 years ago.
Well, yeah. And of course, someone brought it up to me on social media, and it does make sense. Like, oh no, they didn't protect Vassell and Hamill. They might get drafted. You know what else might happen? They may get traded before the draft because they're still property of the New York Mets all the way into Rule 5 draft.
That's a great point. Great point. I didn't even think of that. Great point.
I'm not saying they have great value and we're going to sit here and package them in some kind of deal for, you know, somebody huge or Crochet or anything, but we don't know, because until that time happens, even with the guy, you know, certain guys, there's a difference between being non-protected, non-tendered, And then, but there's also like a DFA where you can keep a guy, but when they're released, then they're gone. But we don't know yet. There might be some trades that just haven't happened yet. Maybe some team honestly thinks they want to go ahead and draft one of those guys, but why don't I just trade them real quick for basically who knows what? It could be cash considerations. I always love the idea. The Mets need to start trading for IFA money because they're in the market now more than ever. The last couple of years, they've been signing the top three-ish ranked.
And it may help them with Sasaki. Who knows? It may help them with Sasaki.
Might as well try it. I know this year, in January 2015, the plan, because it's not guaranteed until they sign, but they're basically tentatively in agreement with arguably the number one prospect in the entire IFA organization or in the world in that draft. I mean, not the draft, but the signing period. So when Elian Pena, if he signs, you're literally signing this class's version of Ronald Acuna and Soto. Like, it doesn't mean he's going to become that, but that's where they are right now. And it looks like the 2026, 2027, they're also eyeing a guy, a kid who's ranked in the top five of all of the prospects in these classes. So they are even changing their kind of aspect on things in that as well, because the old regime used to kind of be more of quantity over quality, and they would sign 20, 30, 40 kids at like 20 grand to 1,000.
They're looking for the lottery ticket. It was a lottery ticket mindset. Yeah.
Which, by the way, it worked for like a Jose Buto. I think it was like 5 or 10 grand and many moons ago.
Sure.
How often are you going to get a Buto for 10 grand? You don't know with that.
No. You talk on X a lot about trading prospects. And I'm not big on Garrett Crochet, but let's say, and I think that a lot of what you keep hearing is that the Mets are going to stay away maybe from the top of the pitching market and focus more on offense and maybe fill out their rotation with arms that are tradable. You have Sproat, you have, as of today, Sproat, number one prospect, Jet Williams, Drew Gilbert, Ryan Clifford, Carson Bengue, who is was drafted this past June, Ronnie Mauricio still there, Jeremy Rodriguez. These are the top prospects in the Mets system. Are there any keepers, in your opinion, that you would absolutely not trade? Or do you feel, listening to you talk about what Stearns has been doing, evaluating the system, does he feel like, hey, these are my tradable assets, I could rebuild the system better than what it was when I got it, and to hell with, you know, these prospect rankings, because the fans will go crazy depending on what they get back. What are your thoughts on, you know, when you see the Mets' top prospects now, most of whom were acquired during the purge in 2023?
Well, yeah, but again, first and foremost, none of these guys, other than the last draft, are Stearns guys. So if it was up to me, and again, I started snooping around, started messaging one of my Mets sources, and honestly, even in another show, one of my untouchables at this point, I guess I'm semi on the fence with Jet. I want Jet Williams to be with the organization. Do I call him an untouchable? I don't know about the
word. Is he a Jose Altuve in the making?
Well, I don't know how much pop he's going to have. I still love the idea of him. I want to know defensively what you're even doing with him, because again, it's a bad analogy or a bad comp, but if he's like the defensive equivalent of a Mark Vientos, then what do you want to do? If that's the route,
not in center, that doesn't work. That doesn't work for me, and that won't work for Stearns up the middle. Let's put it that way.
I finally came to my newest conclusions at this point through this week, who my untouchables are. So just to throw out the names, my true untouchables in my head, one kind of makes some sense to people who know. Some is going to confuse people. Mine would be the pitcher, Jonah Tong. I would prefer make him untouchable. And the hitter is Jesus Baez, who not a lot of people talk about or consider him like a thing you hear about in the national media or the beat writers.
Right. And he's number 14 prospect, third base, shortstop. Why do you like Baez so much? I mean, Tong is clearly shown potential and might be moving up quickly into the conversation. I'm not sure if it would be this year, but maybe a year and a half from now. Why do you like Baez so much?
I like Baez because the Mets organization likes Baez. So that helps. But obviously, I even know about him. I know his character. I don't even know if the stories are rightfully to be disclosed publicly, but he's done some amazing things, even for his family and for his mother. So he's had a lot of sacrifices since turning pro.
Good good pop in the Florida State League. 10 home runs. It's not an easy place to hit home runs sometimes.
No, but that's the thing. The thing in the last few years, the Mets organization, it's going to sound dumb because everyone should get into it these days with the metrics and analytics. But now it's all about exit velo, slugging, and barrel rate. A kid like Jesus Baez is the one that hit Stearns' radar from the time he took over because of what the numbers are showing behind the scenes outside of the game. So they love his exit velo because he just destroys the ball whenever he makes contact. Does it always translate? Hey, it doesn't always translate up the levels, but here's the thing. He also has a hit tool. He doesn't strike out a lot. He'll get his walks in there. So when you have a guy with a low K rate, very high exit velo rate, if you have like a Ronnie Mauricio, but with a lot more walks and a lot less Ks, that sounds exciting to an organization at 19 years old.
Yep.
That's why they love him. And again, even speaking with people literally yesterday in the Mets organization, they even like Baez more than Tong. I'm like, whoa, I love them both. So again, that's how highly they regard him.
Before I get to a couple other names, everybody's high on Luis Angel Acuña. Had a great week in September. Remember, it's a week in garbage time. Pitchers that didn't know him. He fell to number 12 on the MLB prospects with the Mets. Doesn't matter. That's just speculative rankings. But I look at him and I say to myself, okay, he's not going to play shortstop, not for a long time. And I know that from what I understand, Dick Scott believes he could play center field and play center field in the big leagues. He could have this past September. The Mets have a center fielder, but he doesn't hit and he strikes out a lot in Siri. And obviously Tyrone Taylor is a nice player, but not a star. Are you a believer that Acuña could be, if not an everyday player, a 350, 400 at bat guy for this club? Are you more in the camp? And I'm one of those that say, okay, his last name holds cachet. There's still analytics and scouting. Maybe deal him now if we have another Dom Smith that you hang on to and basically you lose out on maybe selling high. Thoughts on Acuña, because I'm really curious. Because I'm not as high as other fans are. I don't know if, because the minor league numbers, again, I'm going by the numbers and how he profiles. They're not overly impressive. A 660 something OPS in the International League doesn't tell me he's an everyday player.
Well, yeah, that was the weird thing. See, after the trade, they got the deadline. They acquired him. His numbers were like, it was high. I think he had like a 900 OPS in the other AA league. And then he joins the Mets and is... everything drops other than his walk rate went up and his K rate went down. So I don't know if he immediately learned some kind of new skills in the Mets organization, but then the power kind of never returned so far in the Mets organization. Then first I was high on him. Then I was low on him. Then he gets called up and it's like he couldn't see in the lights. And now all of a sudden he's hitting 300, but he obviously, you never saw him again in the playoffs. Now, again, that could be a lot of factors, but you don't want to trust a guy anyway his rookie year like that. He wasn't like a Conforto. He didn't have that kind of impact in their mind.
The old saying is don't trust what you see in March and September, right? Is what they always say.
I mean, that's the thing. Again, a guy like Conforto kept playing through the World Series, but
right. Different. That's a different situation. Longer sample size, came up in July and was much more polished. Let's put it that way in the minor leagues. Let's put it that way.
But the interesting thing is, again, whatever the weird reasoning, lights or not, in the major leagues, he showed the right bat speed. He showed the ability to go the other way. He wasn't trying to pull everything. And he has the natural speed, and we saw the pop. So people kept downgrading him to like maybe a regular, maybe a utility player. I would like to see what he can do. And I do feel he has a better glove and instincts than some of the other top infield prospects. If you go into the rankings, right now, if you tell me I have to make a decision, because I've been doing more of this lately in the last year, I would put him obviously as a better glove than Acuña. I mean, sorry, better glove than Jet Williams. I have Acuña as a better glove than the teenager Jeremy Rodriguez in the system. So I have him as pretty much one of the best defensive middle infielders in the Mets farm system at this point. When you add in the speed and the ability to possibly play center field with his speed, I think he could be a regular. Is he going to, I mean, don't talk about his brother, but can he be a consideration with all-star vote guy? I would like to hope and think so because he is still young. While we're all yelling at him, he's still in his early 20s.
Yep.
So I think.
Look, I'm ruined from Wright and Reyes. Wright and Reyes came up. Reyes was 19. Wright was, 21? And they were stars right away. And look at Soto. Here the Mets pursuing Soto, an 18-year, 19-year-old, was a star right away. That's not common. So sometimes we have to, in the world that we are now, because in the 80s, when I was a kid, even into the mid-90s, maybe Generation K and Greg Jeffries were the exception. You didn't hear anything about any of those guys. When Preston Wilson got traded for Mike Piazza, nobody heard about him. When A.J. Burnett got traded for Al Leiter, nobody, now today, that would have been a big deal, right? Would have been a big conversation. So that's part of it, too. Maybe we're being unfair. And as a fan base and prognosticators that are talking championship and the top of the league, you're pushing these guys to be something maybe that's they're not ready for.
And you know, I'm sure he technically wasn't still. And people were starting to call him up because when I was talking to the hitting coach in AAA last year, they were ready for him to take off. When I was asking in June and July, I'm like, hey, he seems to be getting hot now because he was slow like May and June.
Yep, really bad.
He started getting hot, and I started asking around. The coach was like, this is him. He's only going to get better the entire second half. Now, hey, hats off to him because we saw what happened through September, but they believed in him basically is the overall premise. So they didn't want to hear the negativity, what was going on around him rankings-wise. They said he's legit. He has the glove. And I think he's going to keep hitting throughout going forward now from this point. I didn't get details of what he was doing differently or specifically or any kind of – I think he had a minor injury, which a lot of people do. But they believed in him, so I'm sure they still believe in him because, again, yeah, September he was good. You're going to bury something like that in the playoffs when you're a title-contending team. But I think they probably are going to give him a shot. But, again, now I'm going to put him, even though he has Major League cup of coffee, probably I'll put him on the Tidwell – Vassell Hamill level of sorts in that you don't want him to break camp, but you're excited. Like Drew Gilbert and Acuna, I don't consider them untouchable to be traded. I don't also consider them worthy of sorts to break camp in this title contending team. So that's where I have him. I have him as a really nice AAA guy. I look forward to seeing him because of the inevitable, but not right out of camp.
Would you put Ronnie Mauricio in that category too? I know he has big league time. He was out all year. He's recovering a little slower. Incredible bat velocity. We saw that in the small sample size. Vientos has kind of changed the dynamic of the infield. I'm not sure Mauricio's a second baseman. Maybe there's an opportunity at the corner with Pete leaving and Vientos going there, but where do you see Mauricio in all this? Is he somebody that falls into the same category as Gilbert and Acuna, where he's not somebody that's chopped liver, but maybe he's not untouchable, but maybe he's somebody that won't break camp because he doesn't deserve it. Maybe that's because of injury or something else. Where do you put Mauricio in that equation?
Yeah, man, I'm not sure that Ronnie Mauricio is going to magically just hit and not playing for an entire year. And I believe he's not even playing winter ball, probably for good reason.
Very good. Difficult to see him break camp. Very difficult.
So, I mean, if he hits like 350 in spring, it's going to look fantastic. But even if he did, I still would have him in AAA. He probably needs to play, honestly, the entire season in AAA with like four. He needs to be a September call-up, hopefully, best case scenario, except for the inevitable. But yeah, him, even Beatty, whatever's going on, whoever doesn't get traded out of all the names we're talking about right now, I want all of those names in AAA, to be honest.
Is there any name that we're not talking about that you believe at some point, and it doesn't have to be early in the season, maybe similar to Acuna late this season, that could be a contributor to a pennant contending ball club, to a club with aspirations of making the playoffs and going further? Are there names we're missing that, quite honestly, we should be thinking about as options to help this club in some way, shape, or form before the 2025 season is said and done?
I'm not sure what other names there are. I mean, like another guy who's Rule 5 eligible, but probably on the, we don't know if anyone's going to draft him, will be like a Luke Ritter, who's like,
I was just about to ask you about him. And Nate Lavender hurt, but a perfect guy like Nunez with San Francisco a few years ago.
Yeah.
Maybe he gets stashed. I could see Lavender getting stashed and maybe they get him back a year from now, but I don't think I could see him. And Ritter's a guy. Is he 4A? Is he a guy that, because he's versatile, he can hit, he's got power. Is he Mike Hessman? I mean, I'm dating myself with that name. I'm sure you know who I'm talking about, you know?
I mean, yeah, I could have thought that he was going to basically be a little bit more versatile of DJ Stewart with the same kind of power. I don't know why he didn't get a chance to be DJ Stewart. I mean, sometimes I don't know what they want to do with like the roster manipulation and stuff, but like with Vassell, what was it last year? I thought he was going to get a call up, and I was like, well, maybe they're purposely not doing it so they don't have to roster him and worry about the 40 man in winter last winter. Yeah. And now look what happened. Yep. They may have saved him to protect him for this coming winter, and now they're not even protecting him. So these are how things can happen really fast, but I'm not really sure off the top of my head other upper minors guys. I mean, there's guys that I have liked, like some pen arms. Like, can someone be another Buto, or, you know, can someone be those kind of Nunez type guys for 2025?
I like Nunez a lot. I have to say, I like Nunez. Hopefully he stays healthy, but I like Nunez a lot.
Oh, I love him. He's been so kind to me over the years too. He's such a sweet guy.
I'm a little worried about his health, but they seem to have it under control with the PRP injections. And I just feel like Tommy John's in his future, but I guess we'll see.
But that's the thing. I think with all the moves that Stearns is doing right now, probably one of the things is that the majority of ones that won't break camp, if they have options, they're going to Syracuse. If they don't have options, they may not have another choice but to go to Syracuse to stay in Major League Baseball or Minor League Baseball. So I think Stearns probably isn't super excited about the AAA roster, which, by the way, I don't think they did really well. I think last spring I was like, they have like an all-star team. And then the season went on. Gilbert died, Jet died, everyone went down with injuries.
Yeah, they called up Iglesias and Torrens. He never played for Syracuse, but they needed some of their AAA roster at times. Buto, look at that.
Although you just kind of refresh my memory too.
McGill, you know.
I think one absolute sleeper that no one's going to talk about until he maybe ever shows up is like our new version of Luis Guillorme 2.0, Wyatt Young. I don't know if like a Wyatt Young is going to hit enough to get a shot. He would be a very interesting utility player to call up. If a Wyatt Young is called up, he's basically being Iglesias, but without any of the star power. Could he be Iglesias-ish? Could he be the Timu Iglesias? I think that's the cool kid's term. Like, can he be the Walmart version?
I do like
Wyatt Young, but he could be one of those guys because everyone else we talked about right now, Gilbert, even Sproat. We haven't talked about Sproat, but he's a high-ranking guy.
Well, Sproat now is number – look, that's the guy. Like, Sproat is – if I'm – let me just go back. He's number one on the list. Yeah. And he's a guy they drafted. They couldn't sign him, and then they draft him again. I mean, that's the guy that – is he a top-of-the-rotation guy? Is he their version of Syndergaard? I'm not saying he's going to be Harvey or DeGrom. Can he come in and do what Syndergaard did or what Matz did in 2015? Like – is that the guy right now? Or is it, and I'll throw these other two names and you could tackle all three. Is Buto finally going to go back in the rotation? Because I'm not so sure he's a reliever. I think that was maybe some magic beans and pixie dust. And McGill, I still think, is a guy that's always going to disappoint you. I think the way they handled him at the end of the year, they spaced him out with Kodai Senga. And if you have Sasaki in this rotation, you're going to need six or seven starters. You spot him against certain teams. Certain situations, he can look really good against the White Sox and the Blue Jays, but an Atlanta on the road, and he didn't pitch that poorly. Let me be fair to him that last weekend of the season, but I don't trust him. I don't trust him, you know? And I don't think he's going to stay healthy, but what do you know, tackle those three guys. You got Sproat, you got, and then maybe even throw, is Peterson a bit of a magic beans and pixie dust?
Well, I hope now that healthy David Peterson, because then all of a sudden they were throwing out some hip things. And I remember he had some, to use the hockey term, he was having lower body issues back in low A, high A, I think, when the Florida State League was high A. He was having those issues years ago. So if it was finally a bunch of years later in the majors resolved, David Peterson sounds like a legit core rotation guy, not like 1, 2, 3, but he could be an SP4 or 5 all through his arb years if he's healthy. Now, a guy like Buto, we can make a lot of thoughts on what happened at the end of the year with him. He couldn't pitch back-to-back. He could barely pitch every 2 days.
He's like how Seth Lugo was when he first
played. But that's the thing. So my thing is now, like, I'm glad you said that. So in 2025, can they – I think that what happened was he started doing the thing being Mets Seth Lugo in 2024, which was working out really well. And then what happened? Nunez went down. And then Maton was up and down. They started not trusting Reed Garrett for a while. So what happened with the pen was they had him in the perfect Seth Lugo role up until the other guys started dropping to the IL and struggling. And now they needed Buto to be the eighth inning guy pretty much, or the seventh, eighth inning guy. And he couldn't do it multiple times a week. If they had a healthy enough pen, we'd be talking about Buto staying in that Lugo Mets role, in my opinion. Now for Sproat, I love that he throws 98 to 100 as a starter. Is the command ever going to be there to be a SP2? Can he be a number two starter behind Senga? There could be a ceiling for him to be the two guy behind a Senga with command. But he's had those command issues since college. But talking with the pitching coaches and stuff in the Mets organization last year, they love his work ethic. He's doing everything asked of him. Is it going to translate consistently? Because if so, he's in the road. He could almost break camp with command, which he probably still wouldn't, because for a title team. But I would see Sproat in the rotation in the first half of the season with command and AAA.
Do you see Buto eventually, that's his role as a starter, or you think it's still up in the air where he goes? Because I'm not so sure where he's going to go. I'm not so sure. I mean, he could be very solid back-end pitcher. Still, I thought he walked a little bit too few many guys when he was starting. And the Mets walked more batters than only a couple of teams. And that's, I don't know if you have any insight to that. That drove me bananas. And by rights, they should have been a 90 loss team with the amount of walks they had. But maybe I'm missing something. Where do you see Buto on that?
Well, even with Buto, before all the excited madness started when he got up, when he was still in the minors, I started talking to my Mets people and they were like, we like him a lot, but he's got to fix his command. And that was from last spring. So they were excited about him. So he was already on their radar to be a major leaguer, but they wanted proof is in the pudding. And he ended up delivering. But I guess, yeah, my thing is with that type of command or one of those guys with our pen arms, when you come in with guys on base, it's a whole different world. With him, with his changeup being them, he's not one of those guys going to throw 99. And maybe whether there's people on base or not, you bring in Buto to throw 99. But since he's throwing still hard, but 95, 96, and more of a changeup than the fastball being his main pitch, it seems like with his assortment, you probably would like him more in the rotation than in the pen. I don't know if it's going to work out long-term in the pen because, again, doing the long man thing, I don't know how consistent a title.
You
got
to space him out. You got to figure out. There's a lot there. Do you have any insight of the Mets? Is the Mets organization more about stuff and spin and they don't care about these walks? Because I think the walks are a problem. And there's walks up and down. And you mentioned the guys going to Tampa and all of a sudden throw strikes. I don't understand. And I'm sure they're not comfortable with it. This is fundamental baseball. You can't have the kind of walks in a season when only the 121 loss Sox and 100 loss Angels are worse than you. You can't. I'm sorry. Maybe you could be somewhere on the higher walk rate. I've done some research on that. It's not like every postseason team doesn't walk batters. You can't walk the kind of guys they're walking. It's obscene. It hurt them against the Dodgers, and it really should have hurt them during the regular season. They were fortunate to navigate it.
Yeah, I'm trying to see even farm system wide. I want to stick to the minor leagues, how it may have translated in the major leagues we saw too. For the minor league system, I've tried to be pretty honest recently on some shows on social media about there might have been like a learning curve in 2024 when Stearns took over, both with the bats and the arms throughout the farm system. I communicated with someone who now is no longer with the organization. They weren't super excited about the situation with the bats and what they were teaching the bats. It's all about aggression, attacking, exit velo, exit velo, exit velo. And it looked like using the old school archaic, you know, stats, all of the batting averages were down. The Ks were up. But then all of a sudden the OPSs were down. And talking to my peoples, it was like, well, maybe some of the OPS is down because no one's walking anymore. Everyone's trying to pound the ball. Everyone's trying to be Baez. Everyone's trying to be Ronnie Mauricio because they're getting all the hype.
Right.
Everything was going wrong in the farm system. That might have been a learning curve. And I'm thinking with the pitchers, I don't know. With the pitchers from the pitching lab from last year, the coaches and the Mets organization with new analytics and new resources, they started teaching a lot of the pitchers all new things. I've been joking about it for the last year. They're all about the cutter and the sweeper slider, and they're actually teaching it to all the players, whether they were using it or not. Or the guys who threw it.
That's going to lead to walks. That's going to lead to walks and balls, that's for sure.
Exactly. Now, again, is it going to be that simple? I don't know. I even had a really good draft pick last year that I've been communicating with they basically changed all of his pitches. So, you know, when you're changing things right from when you're here, or a guy who's been here 1 or 2 years, and now here's your new sweeper, here's your new cutter, here's your new grip, it can work. Like a guy like Tyler Stewart, who's now on the Nats, he learned a new cutter from a Mets coach, and he started to take off. Other guys, maybe they're at different learning curves, learning these new pitches, but they do now have all the resources.
They like sweepers and cutters, basically, is what you're telling me.
Yeah, that's been
isn't a cutter really a two-seam fastball?
Everyone's got the cute terms for
it. I mean, everybody wants to. So you like the two-seam fastballs instead of four-seam and sweepers. So, and then I guess as we wrap up here, that leads into my final thought. Is that part of why they're signing a Dylan Covey, a Hangeman, a Carrillo? Like, is there any of these scrap heap guys? Because there's been a lot of movement since Halloween from this organization. Forget Davinsky. He has a history of a really elite slider many moons ago. Is there anything that you see out of these guys? There's somebody that you like. Have you even looked at it? And is what you just said playing into who they're selecting in that sense? Because from the surface, giving a Covey a major league deal, I'm like, what?
That's what I think they're going with their new resources that they technically didn't have, for better or worse. So, and I saw someone say it on social media, and maybe it makes sense, not necessarily as a comp, but they may be seeing some of these guys. And Stearns is like, you know, with Hefner and with all the minor league coaching and the pitching lab, can we turn some of these slow wage deal guys into a Reed Garrett in 2025? So, but again, Reed Garrett started throwing like 98 out of nowhere at some point too, but putting aside the 98 plus, but can he turn any of these guys into Reed Garrett? And he had some really hot streaks. So I think he keeps trying to do that role. Who can I turn into the next kind of boy wonder?
And Reed Garrett was a Billy Epler sign. He wasn't even a Stearns sign. They just developed him.
Yeah.
And quickly. And really quickly, within a spring, basically, at that point.
And then again, now he's looking for certain things based on the resources that he's probably had at his disposal with the Brewers. Now he has all these resources with the Mets. That's why a lot of the bats, like when they drafted Carson in the first round, he's an exit velo barrel guy. Now this is what Stearns is going to do, because a few years ago, I don't think they were necessarily having all of these statistics and analytics and exit velo in the college high school players. So they just kind of went with scouting that is still great, but without having those numbers to back it up on a computer, they went with the eyeball and everything else. And now they're going with a Carson type player. And I think one of the bats they signed, one of those veteran bats this offseason already to a minor league deal, major league invite, he's another exit velo guy.
Yeah, Luis de los Santos, Donovan Walton. Those are the two bats they've signed. Everyone else has been an arm. Are they moving away from scouting like the Astros? Is that the feeling that you're getting?
Well, I mean, I do know it's been somewhat public at this point. I'm trying to put a number on it. So many guys have been let go even through the season. Now, into the offseason, I had a source tell me it might be over 20 people at this point. They've let go of over 20 minor league staff quietly, including coaches, scouting, everything. It's at least 20 to plus. Even in the last couple of weeks, guys have been either let go or they finally have, you know, stated something publicly moving on. He's completely turning over the whole farm system. Even I was worried. I asked a source, like, what is going on? 20 plus. And I was basically told, for better or worse, or to not make it harsh, we can replace everyone very quickly. So I don't know if he already has guys.
Wow.
You know, in his...
Wow. That tells you he's a confident guy and he has a vision. I mean, from a positive standpoint, he wants stability. They need stability in player development. Part of why they have to have a $350 million payroll is they can't fill any spot value-driven. The bullpen's atrocious. They have to go out and get Maton. They have to get Stanek. I'm not saying those are bad guys, but you shouldn't have to get those guys if you're the Dodgers, because the Dodgers go get the next level up. They get the elite. The Mets aren't there yet, so it'll be really, really interesting. Ernie, what do you got coming up? Obviously, there's the winter meetings, the Rule 5 draft, big league action in Soto. We're all on Soto watch. Hopefully, our long national nightmare will be ended after Thanksgiving, and the Mets will sign him, and then we can move on. But a Soto signing, it's going to be expensive, so you're going to come into play because the Mets are going to have to round out that roster with some value. So what do you got coming on? You could be the bell of the ball before we know it. Everybody's going to be calling Ernie Dove. Who's this guy? Who's that guy? Stearns is trying to round out the roster, and Ernie Dove becomes the big name on social media in Mets land. At least I'll try to make you the big name, because people always talk about how they learn. I mean, I had so many people the last time you came on talk about, I didn't realize what they're doing in the minor leagues and why the numbers don't actually matter. So what do you got coming up, and where can people find you at Ernest Dove on X?
Yeah, you could find me on YouTube, the Mets Minor League Report. You can search my name, Ernest Dove, or search Minor League Report. I always want to get back to the basics, and I got to be me. So the plan is I'm going to go back to interviewing some minor league players. I already have one in mind I've been chasing down for a couple of weeks. I know he's been training in St. Lucie, because some of the players are still in St. Lucie, although by now I don't know if they're returning home. So look for some future minor league player interviews from me on my YouTube channel. You could also look for me on sportswireradio.org. That's sportswireradio.org. I'm actually kind of pulling my LL Cool J, don't call it a comeback. So in the month of December, I'm trying to bring the band back together with my guy Thomas. And I'm going to be on a show, on his show, in December on Sportswire Radio. So please be on the lookout for that. And right, in print form, I keep trying to do it. You may find me on some print form on maxmets.blogspot.com.
Well, listen, we always enjoy you. Be well. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. We always learn, and we'll be checking in with you again. So be well, Ernie. Thanks again so much.
Thanks for having me.
All right, we're back. Final thoughts. Great stuff from Ernie Dove. Always appreciate when he comes on the show. Always gives you something to think about. And I think the two things that we could take away from the conversation, and I think it's important, as the Mets go out and sign players, especially specifically these scrap heap guys or these under the radar guys, if you want to use less negative terminology, pitchers in particular, I mean, even hitters, looks like on the hitter perspective, exit velo with the bat is of paramount importance. And from the pitchers, can they throw or do they possess a really good sweeper and a cutter, which is really a two-seam fastball? And I think pitchers who have those skill sets and maybe need refinement, and he used the term Reed Garrett, or the player Reed Garrett, how Mets took him and molded him into a very serviceable reliever. I mean, he had some injuries, and I think when the leverage got a little bit higher than the sixth inning or where there was a safety net, I'm not so sure Reed Garrett is the guy, but that's separate stuff. That should give you an inkling. And as we go into, and we will be looking at some of these scrap heap pickups at Beyond the Mic this week at some point, that's some of the things we'll look at. Do they have a really elite sweeper or a good sweeper? Or do they have, you know, the ability to improve upon that? And what is their repertoire? That'll give us why they sign these guys, especially so early in the offseason. The Mets have 9 now roster spots open out of the 40-man roster. So that's point number one. And then point number two is you get the feeling that Stearns looks at, and this is totally speculative by Ernie, totally speculative by me, but as you look at how they left Hamill and Vasil unprotected, and even Yoander Suarez, and I'm not, and Ernie made a great point. These guys could be traded before the Rule 5 draft in a couple of weeks. I'm not so sure that Drew Gilbert, Jet Williams, Acuna, these guys that are currently here, are a lock to be part of the 2025 Mets, or and maybe even a Brandon Sproat. Maybe they're going to be used as trade bait to bring in a big-time pitcher or an offensive player. You know, let's talk about Garrett Crochet just for argument's sake. I don't like Garrett Crochet. That doesn't mean that Stearns doesn't like him. And it's not like he's chopped liver. I just think he comes with tremendous risk. But if you don't believe in these guys, if you don't believe in Gilbert, you don't believe in Acuna, you don't believe in Jet Williams, and their talent and some of the things that make them a top prospect, and in, let's face it, in the top 100 in baseball, gives a team like the White Sox some joy, or entices them, well, go out there and bring in some talent to a roster looking to compete and win in 2025. And then he's going to build up the farm system with the kind of pitchers and hitters that they want with the new technology that they have brought in. I mean, let's face it, the guy came in a year ago. He's only had one draft under his belt. 5 different player development heads prior to him. You had Brody, you had Sandy involved, you had Zach Scott, you had Jared Porter, you had the John Ricco and J.P. Ricciardi. The Mets have had a lot of people involved in decision-making over the last 8 years or so. And it shows with how their farm system hasn't been able to really produce enough. Sure, you got the Alonzos and the McNeils and Vientos and, you know, the occasional arm that comes through like a McGill and Peterson, but the farm system's not producing enough around the margins, especially, and you did not necessarily get the same glowing report from Ernie on a Brandon Sproat or a Dom Hamill or a Mike Vasil that sometimes you get when you just read general scouting reports or those who are not diving into it in the same manner. So really interesting stuff. It'll be fascinating to see where Stearns goes. We value prospects. We hug prospects. We love our prospects. But, you know, Stearns right now might be looking to flip this thing over and use what he's got in the system now and some of the, look at like the Yankees doing the marketing behind the talent, get some talent into the big league roster that could help them make the playoffs and compete for a championship. And while you're doing that, you have your own plan to rebuild the farm system in your vision, you know, how you want it, and maybe better. So we'll see. And I think it's interesting to hear Ernie's two players to watch in the farm system, Jonah Tong and Jesus Baez. Baez is interesting because, you know, like I said, he hit 10 home runs in the Florida State League. Not an easy league to hit. He's only 19 years old. So when Ernie Dubs says keep an eye on a guy and he plays short, third, and second, I don't know where he's going to round out. He's 5'10", so he's not uber tall. I'd have to see him play a little bit. But it'll be interesting to see, does Ernie value his value on this? Do the Mets value these two guys at the same level? And it'll be interesting to see how this transpires. So keep an eye on Jesus Baez coming into the 2025 season, because if Ernie Dove is looking at him, so should you. So anyway, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to this latest edition of the Talking Mets podcast. I want to thank Ernie Dove for joining us and spending a lot of time talking about the Mets roster and the minor leagues. You can check me out all the time at the TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. NoG, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. And I'd love for you to subscribe to the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. No more than the cost of a cup of coffee each month. And of course, I want to thank the good folks of the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Hopefully, no big news. We want to take a little bit break for the Thanksgiving holiday. Some stuff coming out this week about the 40-man roster, maybe some of the scrap heap pickups, some of the non-tenders that may be out there. So stay tuned for more over Beyond the Mic. But until after Thanksgiving, no more Talking Mets podcast, and we'll be back with another edition of the show after the holiday. So till then, take care, everybody.
For the